Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Tonight's Raw featured a main event of Charlotte versus Bianca Belair for the Raw Championship, and it ended by DQ when Charlotte bashed Belair with a chair. A lengthy and good main event match marred by kind of a cheap cop-out finish, but it was a show that oddly featured clean finishes in 6 out of 8 matches. I don't think we had one instance of a distraction. And that was among the more noteworthy things on the show. We also have the King of the Ring and Queen's Crown finals set. It'll be Zelina Vega taking on the winner of tonight's match, Doudrop. And it'll be Xavier Woods taking on Finn Balor in the King of the Ring finals on Thursday. Also noteworthy, I don't know if I missed it, but I don't know if they mentioned Saudi Arabia by name. They had a plethora of Saudi Arabia mentions last week on TV. So that was kind of interesting. And then we had Drew McIntyre and Big E teaming up successfully against Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode, and Austin Theory getting a clean win against Jeff Hardy. So those are some of the high points on the show. We also had Goldberg and Lashley in a back and forth that I thought was pretty good, hyping up their match. And a lot to talk about on tonight's show. Cam, did it strike you watching the show tonight? How many just non-distraction oriented, or actually a complete lack of distractions, and how many clean finishes there were, except for, you know, the big two matches. It almost felt to me like they were trying to build up equity, like there was some self-awareness that the two major matches not having a good finish would jump out more if they had screwy distraction finishes the rest of the show.
Well, if we want to talk self-awareness, Wade, if you include the Jeff Hardy-Austin Theory match, if you include R-Truth's involvement, every single match except the Doudrop and Shayna Baszler match featured a black wrestler.
Yes,
that's insane.
I didn't have it quite to that level, but while I was watching the show, I was thinking, there's a lot of black people on this show. And it
was like, yeah,
it struck me as, because there were times in the last, you know, the however many decades I've been watching wrestling, you could go weeks not seeing a black person on a wrestling show.
Yeah. I think the pandemic changed a lot. They started to rely on, I mean, Bobby Lashley and the Hurt Business and the New Day were such a big part of that era.
Yep.
And so like it was really striking tonight. I was like, wow, this is like a really black show. But no, outside of the things that specifically appealed to me, no, it was a lot of clean finishes, very little distractions. And the distractions that came, like Zelina and Xavier putting on the crowns and putting on the capes, and kind of, you know, what do I want to say? Peacocking a little bit. Shout out to the network. Peacocking a little bit. And then there being interaction with them and Finn and her and Doudrop. It was a very straightforward, concrete show. I think that probably the best thing that they did, I thought the main event was really, really good. I understand Bianca not winning, but they ran back Drew and Big E and the Dirty Dogs in a match that everybody was like, you're doing this again. But they did it in a way where, hey, we don't need baby faces hitting each other from dumb misunderstandings. Let's pretend like that one Triple H segment where he didn't drink the water bottle, like they actually watched the show too. And they were like, hey, we don't actually have a problem. We'll get along, but our beef is over the title. Let's make it about that. I thought that was a good cover-up for last week. Even if you run it back, I thought they did a good job there.
Yeah, I think having Drew McIntyre and Big E, who no matter what they do on Thursday, they want them both to be baby faces coming out of the kind of post-Crown Jewel era that we're in whatever. Yeah, and when we move into the roster sort of being settled post-draft. And you want them both to be liked. I mean, Drew's already called out Roman Reigns. He's going to be a lead babyface on SmackDown, it appears. Big E remaining babyface champion on Raw. And last week, they seemed, you know, petty, and they weren't real admirable, and it felt trite and, and cliche to have, you know, them have misunderstandings. They kind of they hinted at it a little bit when Drew was moving over to address Rude, as Rude was kind of hinting at maybe interfering. But they didn't, you know, go too far with that. And I thought it was good to have tension between them after the match, where, you know, Drew spun around Big E. They seem to be on the same page, but then Big E's like has to spin Drew around to go, you're not just going to manhandle me. I'm going to make sure I get kind of the last little shove in. And then, you know, Drew going, hey, I've been planning to be champion and focused on being champion for 20 years. And I love that we could overhear him saying we're the same age. I like when there's something said off mic that we can hear that feels real and isn't just, you know, nonsense. You know, like just oh, I'm just going to yell at you. Like, I think it's interesting when two wrestlers are battling for a championship and they're the same age. They've taken, you know, different journeys to get to this point. But, you know, sometimes it's more relevant when it's a young guy against an older guy. But anytime you bring age and experience into it, it makes it feel more sports-like. And it adds this easy, free layer of intrigue to the match, because now that seed is planted in viewers' minds. Like, yeah, these guys aren't – it's not like one generation against another, like Austin Theory, who looked up to Jeff Hardy as a kid. These are two people who have, you know, there's a different sort of rivalry you have with someone in your age group than someone mm-hmm. who's, you know, 10 years younger, 10 years older. You just, I've learned that in life. I mean, I look at people differently, right or wrong, who are my age compared to 10 years younger and 10 years older. It's all different. So I thought that was a nice little touch. The more it feels like wrestlers are freestyling in an intelligent, sports-like way, especially when they're baby faces, the better. And I'll add to that. You know, Bianca Belair, I'm so in favor of where she has landed as a babyface. And one of the things she was saying to Charlotte, you know, she's saying all these things to Charlotte about, you know, winning and being great and all that. But she also said, you can learn to be a little more kind. And yeah. Charlotte's just such a jerk. And it's just like, I like that. Some people like, oh, that's so whatever, you know, why would a babyface ever express like a positive trait as something to aspire to? That's mm-hmm. not cool. I love that. I think there should be more of that, because it doesn't just help Bel Air, but it actually creates a culture within WWE. And I talked about this on a Weight Killer Hotline last week when someone asked, why is Vince so, where does he come up? Why does he come up so short when it comes to promoting babyfaces? And I said part of it is largely the culture of the presentation at WWE, from the announcers to the wrestlers, where they don't spend their time weaving in that having some good values and conducting yourself with honor is something to be admired. And, you know, instead it's do what you got to do to win and yeah. whatever it takes. So Belair is at a place as a babyface act that I really like. And I thought Drew and Big E, this was a much better version of the face-face hype matchup than what we saw last week, which was a step backwards. This was a step forward, even if there was a bit of a rerun aspect to it.
Yeah, I think if we talk about like a change in culture, if you go back a few weeks to, and it might be a couple of months, to the Usos and the Street Profits, if you go back to them Friday Night SmackDown, their first interaction, it was very much, I know what you stand for, I know what you can do, here's why I think we're better. I think that, and also a lot of credit to Roman Reigns over the last year, but I think that they have done this thing, this shift where real conversation and real trash talk and real competition has really come into play. Like yep. the way that Xavier stepped up and talked to Finn, like I did, you know, I did my research, Wade, because I was talking to you, so I got into my research, right? In the men's King of the Ring tournament, yeah. Xavier is the only person in the tournament who's never held a singles title in WWE.
Interesting.
The only one.
Yeah.
Because Cesaro yep. has that one U.S. title run, right? So yep. it's kind of a thing where I got to talk myself up. I got to let you know where I stand. I got to try to big time you if I can. And even like, I love them being two baby faces. I love Kofi stepping in. I love Finn not overstepping his boundaries as a baby face. Like yeah, they are a few people, Wade. I think the New Day as a collective, the Usos, Roman, Bianca, and Ali too. I think they have really introduced some people who are going to give you that natural trash talk, like that natural pushback to where the person against them can be their best selves. Like, again, like I think Becky Lynch is amazing. I think she's great. I think Becky Lynch is so far gone in a good way that there's really not back and forth. When she's, like, beefing with somebody, she kind of overtakes the conversation. But Bianca and Charlotte is a great dynamic because these are two college athletes. Like, that's a different dynamic than they typically have. Like, you get that with Big E sometimes, but these are two high-level college athletes who both think that they're the best and can really talk to each other back and forth with neither one of them feeling like they're smaller during the conversation. Like, that was a really great back and forth and a great match afterward, for sure.
And in fairness to Mansoor, he might have done some great trash talking in Arabic. It seemed to come up pretty naturally, shooting back at Ali there.
Does anybody have a better home field advantage than Mansoor? Like,
no.
He's not going to lose at Crown Jewel. I don't care who you put him against. Like, he got that in the bag. It's not even fair. The handicap is turned up to 27.
Although I'm a little worried what his punishment might be if he doesn't win, even if it's a work. You know, like, I'm a little worried about that.
So, wait, chill out.
A little extra pressure.
Oh, my. Have you also been drinking before the show? Never mind. Keep going.
Kem, did you hear anything, any reference to Saudi Arabia by name during the show?
No. I even pointed out last week, I was like, wow, okay, they're doing that this year. Because at least last year, it did not come up at all. But like you said, they really did make a point to drive home the location of the show last week. I wonder if there was pushback and they're not doing it this week.
That's what I was thinking, you know, because they've been timid about it, rightfully so. And I mean, I saw some activity on Twitter, about how a lot of businesses have pulled out and WWE is making all this, you know, $40 million or whatever on this event. And you know, I mean, it's replaced the pay-per-view. It's worth noting. This is the last major event in WWE before their New Year's show. This is the last big event of 2021 because with Peacock, I mean, they are delivering to the letter of the contract and not a bit more, it looks like. Because with WWE Network, they would want to stack up all the special events so they could get more subscribers because they'd make more money. Now they can get a flat fee from Peacock. So guess what? Crown Jewel now replaces the December pay-per-view. And then there's only one Sunday event left, Survivor Series, and nothing in December. There's one Sunday pay-per-view left in addition to this one how I should have phrased it. And in a way, it gives a little more breathing space to things, but it also, and we'll talk about it, makes Crown Jewel a more major event. There's more matches on this show than there would be if WWE was also hyping WWE Network and they had a standard October pay-per-view right around the corner and perhaps even a December pay-per-view they were trying to save up like a Hell in a Cell match for. This is a pretty loaded lineup.
Fat card. Like, this card is crazy. And I got to blame you for something really, really quickly because I know we're going to get to other stuff. But I'm touching like 12,000 followers on Twitter now. So I'm starting to realize I can't just say what I think. Like, you and I actually did this show a year ago before Crown Jewel. And I said on the show, hey, I feel like the people in charge of Saudi Arabia are probably the people responsible for the 9/11 attacks. So I don't watch the show. And nobody had a problem with it. I said on Friday night, Wade, I wish the people who are hosting Crown Jewel weren't the people I think are responsible for 9/11. I'd love to watch the show. And my mentions were ablaze the entire night because people decided that reading wasn't fundamental anymore. And then I was blaming the citizens of Saudi Arabia in some way, shape, form, or fashion. It was very nasty. I had to make fun of a lot of people and say one guy's forehead was really, really, really big. But outside of my personal opinion, because again, anybody can watch what they want. I certainly won't judge. That's certainly up to you. But this is a super stacked card that I hate that I'm missing. Like, this is a really, 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 not even top heavy. It's good all the way around. This is a really good show. I'm going to enjoy the gifts on Twitter. I can't wait.
I think the fact that this is a very loaded show on a Thursday morning/afternoon, you know, people can say with him, oh, you can watch it on delay when you get home from work. Well, how many people realistically, and some will, some aren't on social media, and good for them. But many, many people are, and good for them too. It's hard to avoid spoilers, especially when there's a match as big as, a number of them, but Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar in particular.
For sure.
And it still feels, and I said this a lot, I'll keep it short, WWE fans, you know, like Nick Barbati was joking about this at the top of Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure on Saturday, a VIP podcast that is WWE-centric every weekend. He's
fantastic,
like, oh, yeah.
Show, by the way.
They are great. Nick was saying, yeah, you know what? This lineup's still strong. I went online. I was convinced. I changed my mind. I want to go. I'm going to go. He's like, couldn't find tickets. I couldn't find a flight. It was a great bit.
Oh my goodness.
That's, he played
again,
it great.
Fantastic. Wait, can I ask you a question? And I mean this, and I wanted to ask the timeline, but the timeline can be mean. Do the people who attend the show pay ticket prices to go to the show, or do they just go to the show?
You know, I'm not sure.
I'm going to ask. I think there's somebody I can ask about that.
Yeah.
I'm curious because I'm like, are you just – like, is it like the North Korea show? And again, I know just enough about geopolitical politics like to talk about them, but that's something I'm not super invested in as far as the actual extent of power that people have. So I'd love to know if they actually pay to go to the show, because does it adjust things slightly? For sure. But I'm not comfortable watching. And Wade, the pushback was, because Twitter is this, well, the American government, I don't watch American government-funded wrestling shows either. I'm not a tribute for the troops guy. I'm doing something in December. That's my birthday. I don't watch that. But I'm really curious to see exactly what the breakdown is, because, I mean, there could be some value. And there's absolutely value in our citizens performing. There's value in their citizens getting to see something super cool. I don't take away from that. I just have certain boundaries. That's all.
WrestleTix does report that there are no more tickets available for the 22,000 seat venue, which implies tickets were sold.
Okay.
So unless they're all just given away to friends and family, you know, that's why there's
thinking.
No tickets.
I wonder if you can just say, I want to go, you know, but again, that's not an indictment on anybody. I'd love to have the actual information, so I'll check that out.
Yeah. We're going to cover Crown Jewel, although, as I was saying, I think a lot of fans resent the idea that some of these big matches are presented on a show that's bought and paid for and not, quote, earned. Markets work hard to earn a WrestleMania. People like to travel to see the biggest matches. They take pride in planning around that. And you have, we'll see how Survivor Series compares, but a big lineup here late in 2021, post-pandemic, and you can't go. You can't go see it in person. And you can't even watch it live unless you take a day off from work or you work odd hours. And there's something about that, you know, communal experience of social media and watching something live. And now you sort of have to either unplug or get spoilers ahead of time. So it's a money grab by WWE. It is not a product. It's not a host city that earned it in the way other cities that are supportive of WWE earned it. And that's not, it's not anti-Saudi. There's a lot of good people in a lot of bad countries. And I say that just in a general sense. You know, just because you hate a government doesn't mean you should hate the citizens. And a lot of them are wishing they could fight back or quietly fighting back or punished for fighting back against corruption and lack of freedom and lack of progress. And so anything that's, anything that's said about a regime or a country doesn't necessarily apply to the citizens, and it is good to, you know, have people clarify that or make sure that that's in the context of what we're saying. So a loaded lineup, nevertheless. We're going to talk about it because WWE promoted it, and it is the peak of a lot of storylines before they reshuffle for the draft. Let's pause and introduce ourselves here, introduce the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, October 18th. 2021. Keller, the founder, editor, publisher, I'm trying to match all of Tony Khan's titles. a Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, pre-internet and pwtorch.com, and the host of some of the earliest podcasts covering professional wrestling dating back to 2003, which, by the way, for VIP members, we run on a regular basis on our VIP podcast feed. We are rolling through our 2003 post-pay-per-view roundtable podcasts that were around before the word podcast had even become a thing, before it become an official word in our lexicon. Those are available on our VIP feed. So one of the many benefits of being a VIP member. So go VIP, pwtorch.com/govip. And I'm currently the host of the Wade Keller, aptly named Wade Keller Post Shows and Podcasts, and also the Wade Keller Hotline for VIP members, which is a daily update with a variety of formats, and The Fix with Todd Martin, and Everything with Rich Fan. And the aforementioned post-pay-per-view roundtables. Thank you for streaming or downloading the show or subscribing. And the other voice you hear tonight is Cameron Hawkins from the PW Torch East Coast Cast. Cam, welcome.
Wade, thank you for always having me. When we get to that point in the show where we're talking about what we're doing, I'm going to blow your mind.
Well, I was going to say, let's not wait till the end. We did a long, we did a long preamble before intros, so we've earned a little bit of early plug time for you. So is it going to blow everyone's mind or just mine?
Not everyone, because some of my people are listening to this, like on Twitch, but here's the thing. On the first Friday in the month, Wade, which would have been October the 8th, I was actually in New York City at Comic-Con.
Wait, I got to stop you. If October 8th is the first Friday of the month, what was October 1st?
Oh, good point. That exists. The second Friday.
I'm here to fact check.
On October the 8th, I was in New York for Comic-Con.
Okay.
I was actually a part of a panel hosted by Tiger Driver, which was called The Beauty of Blackness in Wrestling. It was myself, Chris, who is the founder of Tiger Driver, Jay Rose, who is a writer and producer for Paradigm Pro Wrestling, Kaz, who you'll most famously know Kaz for writing the New Day Usos battle rap segment. But he was a writer in WWE for a while. Faye Jackson, retired wrestler, my close friend, lovely creator. We were on a six-person panel talking about the beauty of blackness in pro wrestling. It was like 150 people in the room. It was the coolest thing I've ever been a part of. And, of course, Wade, my close personal friend, Maxwell Jacob Friedman, showed up to encourage me during the show. I blame you for all of this. Thank you for the platform, for ruining my life. No, it was fantastic. We got together and just talked about how great it is to have people like us in the pro wrestling business, what we want to do in wrestling going forward. It was super positive. It was great. You can find that on YouTube if you search Big Gold Belt Media, who recorded that and did an interview with us. So, yeah, Wade, you're this thing I've been doing for so long that you've helped foster led to me being on a panel at New York Comic Con, the second biggest Comic Con in the world. And, great experience. And now I'm doing like five different features this week. Everything's been going great. So please check that out. Again, The Beauty of Blackness in Pro Wrestling, New York Comic Con. You can find that on YouTube. A great show, a great experience with the not so much surprise of MJF being MJF, but a very good time.
That's tremendous. That is awesome.
Yeah.
While you're mentioning things, how can people, you mentioned your Twitter followers, what are other ways people can follow what you do and what you say about professional wrestling and other things?
Absolutely. So on Twitter and on Instagram, it's Seahawk, CEEHAWK. Also, Travis Bryan and myself host the Pro Wrestling East Coast Cast. That's definitely a show you can find at eastcoastcast.com. You've never heard of it. Oh my God. That's a problem. If you want to experience it on the interactive level, twitch.tv/Seahawk. I definitely live stream while we're doing it every Wednesday evening, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central. And then you can also listen to my show, which touches wrestling, but also talks about the goings on in pop culture. That is going to be each Friday night after Rampage at twitch.tv/Seahawk. So yeah, we are really working on expanding this thing. Well, I don't know if Travis told you, Travis works for the government now. How dare he, right? And so we've had to shuffle
around.
There's
no way that's true. I mean, I don't want to get him in trouble,
ridiculous.
But did they ask?
You're going against everything you stand for, guy. So we've had to shuffle around the East Coast Cast a little bit. I believe we'll be on this Wednesday, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central. But, yeah, I've been the media thing. Oh, and one more thing. I did actually – even though I went to Comic-Con, the next day I went to JCW and GCW. So I was there for the Moxley, Nick Gage And
yep.
I know you've been doing this a long time. Wade, I've never seen a death match in person.
Yeah.
I sobered up immediately. It's the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life. I was like, oh, they're really cutting each other with pizza cutters. This is insane. But no, it's fantastic. Shout out to GCW. Shout out to Brett and Orange Crush, who were great hosts. They have a great roster. They basically let us stay in the room. Myself, Faye Jackson, and Lovely, they let us stay in the room the entire day. So while I watched Texas blow what should have been an insurmountable lead, everybody was real nice. The wrestlers were cool. They were real informative. Just a great show. And I talk about that on my Twitch as well. So if you look at my Twitch from last week, you can see my review of both JCW and GCW. Great shows in Atlantic City. Absolutely.
You know, this is just weird. But when you said also that weekend, I went to JC, and I thought you were going to say JC Penney. I'm like, where is this going?
I did not buy khakis.
Yes.
Do not. No, they actually ran back-to-back. They ran JCW in the afternoon, GCW in the evening. Also, Leo Rush, you are not fooling anybody wearing a hoodie with a mask. We know it's you. He tried to be inconspicuous.
Oh,
like,
funny.
You have new braids, Leo Rush. We know who you are. But no, again, everybody was really, really nice. Put on a great show. Super respectful roster. Super respectful crowd. Wade, again, I blame you. I'm weirded out that people know who I am now. People at Comic-Con and at the shows, like, hey, are you Cam? I'm like, yeah, Gary. But no, a great experience the whole weekend. We're making waves. We're making things happen. And between you and Travis, Wade, I owe you guys so much. This thing is going great. Thank you.
Awesome. That's I'm excited for everything that you've got going your way right now. And I hope everybody checks all that out. Okay, let's give out the phone numbers here, and we'd love to have your participation in the show. If you're listening to us live on our regular stream or on Cameron's Twitch, our number is 347-215-8558. Don't be shy. Call 347-215-8558 and push 1 on your keypad to indicate that you want to be on the program. Again, that's 347-215-8558. You can also email the show at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's begin here with a call. We will begin with Nick in Brattleboro. You are first up tonight. Nick, thank you so much for calling. What stood out on Raw tonight for you?
Good evening. Hey, Cam. Great to talk to you again. And I'm with you on not watching the show. You know, that's what it is. I'll listen to the PW Torch and get all the info on that. Going to push back a little bit on you, Wade, on the bad finishes tonight. Yes, they only had two, but they were the two best matches. And while I was watching the Bianca Charlotte match, I'm just going, okay, is Becky going to run out? Is Sasha going to run out? Is Charlotte going to grab the belt and run away? It's WWE has trained me to, when I'm watching something on Raw or SmackDown for that matter, that's a big match between two really big people.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for the messed up finish. And it just, in a way, almost hurts my enjoyment of the match. And
so
I wish they wouldn't
do things.
That.
Two things, Nick. One, you can't be pushing back on me because you just stated facts and I stated facts. I don't think I was, like, heaping praise on them. I was more acknowledging I was surprised
okay.
that they didn't get. I mean, because whenever there's a distraction finish in my written reports on pwtorch.com, I put the word distraction in all caps because I want to shame them. And I want people to realize, oh, my God, it's another distraction. I've been doing this for months, and I didn't get to do it except when I said there wasn't a distraction. Like, my caps lock is sort of like going, what's going on? Did you forget about me? I'm neither praising nor criticizing.
Okay.
As much as I'm just saying it's noteworthy, and I do think perhaps they were self-aware in having all the matches except, well, the two that people care most about have clean finishes. So that's something we can get into more. But when there are six out of eight matches with a clean finish without a distraction or a yank of the tights or interference or anything, that is noteworthy. That does not exempt them. And this is why, you know, good point you bring it up, Nick.
Oh, okay.
Does not exempt them from criticism of that the two matches that people cared the most about, there was not a satisfying finish. Now, I think in the tag match, we could kind of see it coming, just based on it's Riddle and Randy Orton against the Street Profits. It's a, you know, two baby face tag teams, and, you know, AJ Styles and Omos are hanging out nearby. So I wasn't surprised by that. And the stakes weren't high. Like, you know, what does it matter who wins? I mean, I hate to say that, but in the WWE context, it's not like they're going to be talking about the Street Profits winning or losing this match 2 weeks from now. So I didn't think that was like a high crime as much as it was more of a match to set up an angle. But the Charlotte Bianca match, they spent a lot of time building that up. Kim, I thought there were going to be a title change. I thought they were just going to do it. And I was expecting one way or the other, a clean finish, because as Nick is expressing, it's so on brand to not do one. And they were doing so many clean finishes. I'm kind of thinking, well, maybe they are finally going to do, like, you know, surprise us and just go ahead and have a win before sending Charlotte on her way, because that's what they do when, quote, people lead the territory. What were you thinking as in the lead-up to the match and watching it, and what's your take on the finish?
I thought the lead-up was really good. I thought Bianca established, like, as a babyface that you trust, that she was going to do everything she could to win the title. I think the moment for me in the match, when she hit the super German, like, I know a superplex technically is from the middle or top rope, but when you do the German suplex where the person lands on their belly, it's like, okay, we're in business. Like, we're really going there. So when that happened, I was like, oh, we're getting something clean. They did a lot of good near falls. And again, I think that they are the closest thing to a mirror on the women's roster that we've had. Like, these super athletes, like, who are big and strong and fast and can just do, like, these athletic things that everybody can do. I was like, oh, we're getting something clean. So I also thought that. I kind of understood at the end why they didn't do it. Because here's Wade, this is what I think is going to happen. I think we're going to do a literal title swap between Becky and Charlotte. I think that the feud that they have historically is really great. I think that's going to be a very tense moment that I'm going to want to watch, but I literally think they're going to trade belts. And there's going to be a fight or something involved, but that's what I see happening. So I kind of went into it thinking that. But again, that match was really good. But as soon as she hit her with the chair, I went back to my previous thought process and was like, okay, that's what we're getting.
And if we look at the lay of the land of the women's division afterwards and what's coming up this week, they had a chance to avoid the title swap, like New Day and Street Profits. Last time, they had a chance for Belair to win tonight and then on Thursday to have an exit strategy for the SmackDown title, and they just chose not to take that route. And so part of me was thinking, oh, they've created a scenario now where they can have, I guess, what, Becky retain or – so if Bianca – no, Becky would lose to – who in that match is going to – is going to stay on SmackDown? I haven't
Sasha.
Looked at my list. On
so
oh, Sasha.
Sasha did go to SmackDown?
Yeah, Sasha's on SmackDown. So
okay.
Sasha could win because they really stressed – I think it was on Friday's show that, you know, you don't have to win by pinfall or submission or no one, the person involved in the champ doesn't have to be involved in the finish. So I'm thinking they could have, you know, Sasha, you know, pin Bianca in a finish that doesn't really matter that much because it's sort of pre-splitting up onto separate. Well, I guess that, yeah, they wouldn't cross paths for you, but it'd be a breaking point they could do a callback on later. And so Sasha would be champ, and then you would end up with Bianca. Because she scored the one on Charlotte, it wouldn't seem that bad, you know, for her to lose to Sasha, especially if it's in a triple threat with some, you know, not shenanigans, but just sort of chaos in the moment. And so to me, I was like, okay, you know, I hadn't, like, mapped it all out, but I thought, oh, that's probably where we're heading. So the DQ finish with the chair kind of felt jarring to me because I'm like, okay, well, then the only thing they can do is trade belts, or we're going to have a very awkward and confusing year where I'm watching SmackDown and I have to remember, oh, it's the Raw Women's title on SmackDown, which is, I don't think, something they want to do for a whole year. But the belt swapping, you know, they did before, so I thought maybe they'll book themselves out of having to do that again.
That's why you call them the Women's Universal Championship and the Women's WWE Championship.
I know.
You just make it easy on yourself.
But then, yeah. What if the Universal title's on SmackDown for men, but the Universal title is on Raw for women?
I think that language is okay. I just, you know, putting it on a show when you want to have drafts, that's what makes it difficult. I think we could work with that. But, you know, whatever.
Shout out to Rhea
Ripley
back.
For finding a very good-looking replica title. Losing your luggage is the scariest thing. Like, I traveled, you know, all over the last week. I was like, please don't lose my luggage. Please don't lose my luggage. So I can only imagine. But I'm glad they got that situated. And shout out to Damian Priest for having an extra pair of very tight leather pants that Rhea could wear for a match. That's really cool.
Awesome. All right, Nick, back to you.
On the Arabia comment, I thought it was very funny that Mustafa says, you're going to be in your hometown. He wouldn't even say it there. But if you look, he's going, you're going to be in your hometown and I'm going to beat you. You know, it was just jarring. But on the the placard, you know, for the matches that they put up, it had 12 special time, 12 noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Arabian Standard Time. So they kind of snuck Arabian in on the the time of the match.
Oh, they did throw it in there tonight. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. On the announcement.
Arab Standard Time. But nevertheless, that's for the whole region. Arab Standard Time. It doesn't mean it's not an actual reference to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is named after Arab, which is also what the time zone is named after. So I don't think that counts.
Oh, okay.
Well, regardless how I feel or how Wade feels or how you feel, like clearly there's some level of, if not embarrassment, there's a level of caution from WWE in announcing where their show is. And like, you know, I think Wade, you can tell the specific numbers. I don't know if you have them, but there was a significant drop off in network subscriptions when they announced the first show. Like, these aren't just things that we're making up because you think we feel one way or another. This is how, like, the mass audience feels about the show. And maybe it's patriotism. I think it's also, you know, patriotism be damned. It's also to a point, you guys are giving them this thing that we can't go to, this thing that we can't see. Like, there's a level of, like, personal selfishness that is involved in this. You know what I mean? Like, this is a big, this is a huge show. You think I don't want to watch Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar with all this intrigue? Of course I want to see that. But, yeah.
Yeah, and Nick's still trying to find a way to get a ticket.
Yeah, right. He was very funny. He said, I don't know where I'm supposed to fly if I want to go to get it, see the show. Just suggestion is you should put up a poll on A, whether people are going to watch, and then if they're not going to watch, why? Is it because it's on in the middle of the day and you can't see it, or is it a political, you know, just for information's sake? Otherwise, I mean, the show is okay. It's Raw. It's, you know, it's, you're kind of slogging through from 9:30 to 10:30, and then, you know, I mean, Charlotte and Bianca they put on a match. I mean, Charlotte's got, you know, cut her chin on something, I thought, you know, it's just, I still think she's doing well, but I think Charlotte still, I don't know, there's something about when she's talking that just is, I don't know if she's still a little stilted or something, that she's just
okay. Well, I think, let me jump in. I want to get Cam's thoughts on this. I I've complimented Bellar, so I want to get Cam's thoughts on her in particular, and I guess progress is sort of loading it because that's loading the question by saying it's been positive. But over time, how her main roster character has matured or changed or been steered in different directions and what you think of where she is now. And then same thing for Charlotte. You know, there was a time when it seemed like that would be like okay with her just being a star and you can cheer or boo her and she'll be cocky. This was Charlotte going for heel heat. And I'll disagree a bit with Nick if it qualifies as a disagreement. Well, I don't know if it's a disagreement, but I would say that there's a difference and an improvement because we don't hear her talking like this and going to the same cliches and trite comments. I feel like I'm hearing from her. Like, it sounds more real to me when she talks, and she's – I think there's a sense of believability to her saying, I am the opportunity. I've raised the level of the championship. I should have a bigger send-off. Like, I mean, I'm not saying it's not embellished and exaggerated for effect, of course, but I think everybody watching is thinking, you know, I bet she probably thinks that. And that's good. You know, you want, when you're watching, to get a sense that, hey, I know it's a work, but there's real rivalries. These are real personalities. There's real egos. A lot of times people on TV are portrayed the way that they are in real life, and some of that stuff sneaks on the air. And if you can, like, not contradict that on social media, I've been an advocate of that. You want to lean in on something that helps sell tickets on social media in terms of your personality and not just be super sweet and humble if you're Charlotte on social media. Like, I think people watch Charlotte and go, I kind of think that's her, and I don't really want to see her succeed. I want to see Belair succeed. And I think if you work the system, the modern-day system that includes social media, it can enhance and amplify the storyline. And I thought that worked tonight. What do you think, Cam?
Yeah, the best heels say things that are almost true. Like, almost true. I think when she came out and she was like, yo, Bianca gets the title shot the same week she gets another title shot. Like, who's entitled? Like, that was the thing. You call me entitled? Like, look at what she's doing. I also think she's produced to interrupt, but in a way that is still kind of credible. Like, yeah, I enjoyed Charlotte's contribution. I like that this is something you don't see a whole lot. I like it, like, Charlotte can wear her street clothes and Bianca can too before a match. Like, they're actually real people. Like, there's so many good things about what Charlotte does. But I'm a fan of her promo work at this point. I like that she will stop what she's doing to interact with the crowd and be comfortable with it. I like that Bianca hasn't totally changed what she was in NXT. Like, she was kind of a tweener in NXT. Like, she was kind of a better-than-you character. But I like that she can say, Charlotte, these are the things you could do to be in a better position, and Charlotte not receiving those things. I think Charlotte's on the money right now. And ever since she talked about being the opportunity, I think she's been at her best level, for sure.
Yeah. Nick, anything else you want to add before we move on?
Last point, and I'll let you guys discuss it after I get off, is while I didn't like the way the match was booked, I'm glad that Shayna is not going to have to wear a stupid crown around. As I said, I didn't like the way the match went, but I think it was keep the crown off Shayna. Let her go to SmackDown and just kick everybody's ass and as a babyface. And I'm good and happy with that. And with that, I will let you guys go. Cam, great hearing you again. And keep up the great work. I really appreciate what you have to say.
Thank you so much. I really do appreciate that.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it. So we'll take a moment here because this show is serving as our crown jewel preview also. The King and Queen tournament finals are set up. Nick brought up Shayna Baszler not being in the tournament. When you looked at the brackets at first, Cam, be honest, maybe we can check the tape here. Did you think Zelina Vega and Doudrop would be the finals?
No. Yeah. And the biggest thing about that is, like, they're probably going with the least established talents as far as this goes.
Which you like because it gives a boost to the talent as long as they haven't been totally marginalized in a way that pulls the value of the tournament down. And that, I think that would be where the contention would be with this booking decision. But in a generic sense, what you're saying is, saying what you're not saying. You correct me if I'm wrong. That the tournament, if it gives a boost to somebody who needs it as opposed to giving a corny gimmick to someone who doesn't, that's a net positive.
So I'm looking at it right now. So Toni Storm was women's UK champ. Liv Morgan, tag team champ. Carmella, multiple time SmackDown Women's Champ, Natalya, multiple time Raw Champ, Shayna Baszler, multiple time, well, not multiple, yeah, she was a two-time NXT Champ. I don't think Dana Brooks had a title. So this one is a bit more forgiving, I guess, than the men's side. Let me see. It's a bit more forgiving than the men's side. See, this is what I asked about, Wade, and somebody actually put me on game, and so I was wrong. But I wondered if Shayna was left out of the finals as a condition of her sexuality. I did openly ask that, but apparently Doudrop is in the same lane, for lack of a better term. I certainly don't mean any disrespect. So it wasn't necessarily that. So it looks like they're just like, hey, we can produce two brand new stars or one brand new star and come back with somebody new. What's interesting is, and I don't know the numbers, but I feel like big event-wise, this is the least watched show. So making a new star on this show is super interesting. Like, I feel like there's machinations at play. I certainly don't want to project too far on things I don't have information on. But yeah, it's the only match, I think, on the card that features two people who have never been prominent on WWE TV. And I don't think, maybe Zelina, but I don't think either of them have ever been on a main event of any show in WWE TV. So it's really interesting. It's an interesting pairing.
Who do you think stands to benefit the most between Doudrop and Zelina Vega? Like, who is it a better fit for? Because I said last week, Zelina Vega was initially kind of marginalized as, oh, she's just going to be kind of a loudmouth jobber. And it seems like either they are more impressed with her to put her in the finals, or they just wanted somebody lowly to lose to Doudrop. They didn't want Doudrop beating somebody, you know, who they have more plans for. And I guess we'll find out, you know, Thursday, which of those two scenarios is the case. Are they higher on her than we thought, or did they actually intentionally book somebody who is expendable? Because the idea is, let's crown Doudrop with the Queen's Crown, because they think they know Doudrop can work and she's distinctive, but she needs a little something extra, and so they want her to have the crown. The other option is just reverse it. Zelina is nasty, but she's getting a push. She uses underhanded means to win. They protect Doudrop a little bit in the sense that Vega uses underhanded tactics to win, but Vega becomes the queen, so there's a heel with the crown, which is how they most often like to do it. So, yeah, my question to you is, who benefits the most, and then what's your prediction?
Shout out to Joe Pearl from Fightful.com, who said, for shame, Cam, I told you since August that it'd be King Gender and Queen Doudrop. So shout out to Joe. It was me personally. I think that the ecosystem that WWE has built, they can produce a heel in a minute. Like, if there's one thing they can do, it's make a woman seem nasty. They're very good at that. But I think that a babyface who is genuinely over, who the crowd cares about, I do think that they tend to lack the ability to do that. I think when Doudrop came out last weekend and was like, yes, queen, I was like, oh, okay. Y'all get what's going on. You're familiar with the times. I think that she's, one, a fantastic wrestler, two, has a great personality, three, has a unique physique that, you know, they don't always capitalize on. I think you have a chance to make a star in a different way. I think that it's not necessarily her fault, Wade, but people decided that Nia Jax was hurting people. It's just something they agreed on. And so I think that has affected her ability to get over as a top women's star, right? But I think that Doudrop, like, has this unique ability to be in that same lane and cater to a larger portion of the audience. And the biggest thing about her is she's really, really good. Like, that's the thing. I also think that she lasted way too long in Shayna Baszler's finisher. There's a way to, like, make that go by a bit faster. But no, she's good. She's good on the mic. They don't have a problem with pushing Scottish/Irish talents. They feel like they speak good enough to the crowd and they relate. So good on her, man. I think she's the one to go with. I think that in both cases, you go with the faces here. especially because you have, you know, Big E and Drew as faces, and you have Roman and Brock kind of both as heels. And so you can have these two big face wins and everything else kind of play out the way it does.
All right, let's go next to, looks like, wait a second. Let me see here. Okay, that dropped off. Okay, yep, so we'll go to Colin Baltimore. There was someone waiting, and they hung up and was planning to go too. So, Colin Baltimore, you are up next. What did you think of Raw tonight? What stood out?
Yeah, so it was a weird show overall, and with the women itself, with Bianca and Charlotte, it was a really good match. And I'm not a Charlotte fan, but I never discount her in the ring. She's really good in the ring, and Bianca is great, and I big fan of Bianca. So, but yeah, and so I was expecting like Becky to show up too, because it would, and that would make sense, but that didn't happen. So, but just going back to just Crown Jewel in general, I'm going to watch it because it's something I personally think is I can't deny this card really. Overall, in the past, it is with the magic at Saudi Arabia, it sucked. It was on paper and also when it would actually happen. So at least on paper, some great matches on here that I can't deny that I actually want to see. So I'm personally going to watch it. I'm going to watch any live anyway, so that's me. But yeah, it's just – and with – I was just really confused with the whole tournament itself in general. The fact they still didn't have at least Liv Morgan and Tony Storm to advance to the next round at the very least to establish them as, I view them as who could be top stars still very, very questionable to me still because after looking at who was even especially now that Shayna was out of the tournament where people thought she was going to be part of the final two, it was also very puzzling. Have Zelina Vega part of this final two? So it was just so questionable. I still don't know what was behind them doing it like that, booted off the two favorites, in my opinion, off this tournament. It seems so bizarre. They kind of got the men's side right, but the women's are really, at least, find very puzzling and questionable. That's my thought about that entire thing by watching this.
Kim, you want to respond to any of that?
I think that one thing that we run into are these premature draftings. Like, I was literally thinking today when I was coming up with the idea that Xavier Woods was the only person in the men's bracket who had not won a singles title. I was like, wow. Do you remember Aleister Black and Ricochet as a tag team? Why did that exist? I think that for whatever reason, they see these talents who are on the NXT roster and want to bring them up, but they bring them up prior to there being any real plans for them. Like Toni Storm was running NXT UK. She was cold. And now we just kind of have her losing to people who I don't want to say she's better than because that's always relative, but these people have this pedigree and these records and they lose by hook or by crook. So I agree with you. I think you don't put people in a tournament that you plan on being bigger. Like if you go back to those old King of the Ring tournaments, like back in the 90s, you could have a bunch of guys that were going to be future world champions. You had Steve Austin beating Jake the Snake Roberts. All due respect to Jake the Snake, but it was like a long in the tooth Jake the Snake. Like, there's a way to do this that doesn't come across as silly, but don't tell anybody this because they call me a WWE drone for reasons because people are tribalistic. But, like, NXT does this really cool thing where we know Daniel Garcia and Lee Moriarty are two of the best wrestlers in the world, but we don't have them win a bunch of matches yet. We have them lose matches, really good matches, to unestablished people. WWE does not have, for lack of a better term, young boys. They have people they have us watch on their network win a bunch of matches, and then they lose to people who lose a bunch of matches just because they're on the main roster. So I'm right there with you. I think that you need to build these tournaments a bit better. It needs to stop being so top-heavy because, again, the world is rooting for Xavier Woods. Xavier Woods, as a singles wrestler, is the least accomplished person in this tournament, and they're not drawing any attention to that. It's just supposed to be what it is. So, yeah, there's absolutely a problem in how these things are stacked up. I absolutely agree.
Kyle, anything else you want to add? Oh, I muted you, Kyle, because I heard a little background noise. Sorry. Go ahead, Kyle. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, so the it's the women's championship in general with the whole with Bianca Belair and Sasha and Becky in terms of like in my view too, when it comes to Bianca and Lee Sasha too, with both of them, I view them as one of the same, somewhat they feel like they're and also Becky in some degree they all think they're the best and they all want to be champion. And they all say that they're the best, but yet when what Sasha and Becky are saying, it's not great to a lot of people in their brain, but how Bianca is phrasing it in her promos is a lot better. It seems kind of confusing to me. I don't really get that. I think, I don't know. I find all three of them great, but a lot of people don't for some reason.
I want to understand what you're saying. You're saying you don't understand what people like about what Bianca's saying, or you don't – just clarify that for me.
No, it seems to me every time I listen to other people involved and doing review shows about Bianca Belair, Sasha, and now Becky, seem like – or really between – well, really between Becky and – I mean, Sasha and Bianca is that I don't view what's so different between them – really, honestly, I mean, she's like, because I view them as one and the same of how they're in their actions and in their promos and in their how they're talking. It's like it's one and the same, but how Bianca is saying it, it's how people are okay with it, but where Sasha is saying it and what she laughs, all that stuff, people don't like that, and I personally find it hilarious what Sasha does anymore. She opens her mouth, I find it funny, but with Bianca, I feel like people just like her a lot and don't really care that she calls up the EST. I think that should be an arrogant thing, but she said it in such a likable way, which I still – it's such a weird, bizarre situation that I don't see any difference there because I'm a fan of all three, so I don't really
–
see that kind of thing. So that's my situation with that.
Yep. All right, cool, Kyle. We'll talk about that. Thanks for the call. That was good to hear from you.
Yep. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, and wait, I'll respond to that really quick. I think Sasha might be the most gifted woman I've ever seen in the ring. Like, seriously. Like, she makes up things on the fly that I've never seen. I think she's an incredible athlete, right? The only thing I'll say about Sasha is sometimes I think that her inflection comes across as forced. I think that like, her tone and her delivery can sometimes miss the mark. And so with Bianca, I think that what Bianca's saying is a lot more naturally. I'm not sure how often we've heard Sasha's actual voice. Like and again, no shade. I think Sasha's so good in the ring that any question I would have about her inflection goes away. Like, she's still A+. Like, she's that good. But I think that even if the content is similar, I think Bianca just delivers it on a different level. Like, I think that Bianca, Sasha, Charlotte, and Becky would be my top four for – and I also think Shane is amazing. But I think, like, they'd be a step above Sasha as far as delivery of an actual promo. But I would never deny how good Sasha is at literally everything else. But that's my thing. Like, even if the content is similar, like, I'm trying to think. Like, who's a really good white meat babyface? Like, I don't know. Adam Page and Ricochet have the exact same content, but you'd rather hear an Adam Page promo because one of them has the proper inflection and timing and delivery. That's just what it is. So, yeah, even if the content is the same, I just feel like Bianca is able to deliver it in a more natural way. I would love to talk to Sasha just for like 20 minutes to see what her natural inflection is and build off that.
Whatever that weird laugh is. I could do without that.
I wouldn't really laugh like that. But like, I think Bayley came a super long way from NXT to this heel promo because I think that like this is more natural for her. Like Travis and I, by your blessing, Wade, Travis and I did Comic-Con in Austin a few years ago, and she did a panel, and I was like, oh, this is how Bayley talks. That's how she sounds. How good is this? So, yeah, sometimes it's just about finding that natural reaction. I think Sasha's best work was her against Bianca. I think she had somebody who is more on her level, says things she'd probably say. But, yeah, again, I'd love to hear how Sasha really, really naturally sounds and write for her based on that, for sure.
Especially in WWE, but in general, the more natural somebody sounds, the more I think the more effective they are. That applies to play-by-play announcers. It applies to color commentators. It applies to interviewers. It applies to managers, and it absolutely applies to wrestlers from top to bottom. There's going to be times when a wrestler has a character, and it just wouldn't be right.
Is he Scottish or Irish? I don't know. I really enjoy the new backstage commentator. I think he's so good at what he does. I think he's so good. Because he asks actual questions. Like, he's very, very good. So it's literally not about where you're from or who you came up around. It's about are we getting you, for sure.
And I thought Sasha on Friday sounded more like she sounded with Steve Austin, even though that was kind of, I thought, weird. It was a weird performance on her part. And there were some awkward moments with Steve, which, you know, happened with Dean Ambrose too. And with Belair, I thought she was leaning too much, and Charlotte, even going further back, was leaning too much on just kind of stilted, rehearsed-sounding language. Like, I'm reciting lines, but with a certain inflection you expect that a wrestler would have in a promo. Or Belair, you know, it was some of the catchphrases. And Belair, when she's not in a WWE TV scripted environment, is so naturally engaging that you just, like, bring that onto the TV show. Please bring that onto the TV show. And now, in Sasha on Friday, I thought was closer to natural. She still did the weird laugh thing. But whatever, I don't know what planet she was on earlier this year, around WrestleMania time and stuff. I mean, I was uncomfortable watching her. I didn't know what was going on. And I thought Friday she seemed grounded and connected and authentic. And I'm for that across the board with men and women in every role, because WWE has a tendency to sound, you know, cliched, and they lean on the catchphrases, and it's often people reciting memorized lines. And it can be worse backstage than in the ring sometimes. Like, Baron Corbin was pretty good in the ring and awful backstage for a long time. There was just something about not being live, and it was a pre-record where the acting was just terrible. But he'd get in front of the fans, and all of a sudden he just became more real. And I get that. Some people, you know, you sit them in an empty room and say, record a podcast, and they're like, I can't do that. But you put them in a room full of people, and they say, let's just talk to this group. And some people would be scared, but other people, it's just going to be way more natural to chat and be at ease. So WWE, just anytime you can find a way to get somebody to sound a little bit more natural, like you imagine they'd be in real life. And then, of course, that's then when you tweak it and amplify it. That's fine. But you got to have that foundation that authentic, like this is an actual person talking to me in a conversational way that sounds like a human being would talk.
And wait, two things about that. Number one, Rich and I went to WrestleMania Fan Access in New Orleans a couple of years ago, and Baron Corbin was one of the people who got in the ring and spoke, and I was like, oh, he's actually good at this. Like, he's really like a natural talking to people. Also, why is Steve Austin the greatest interviewer in the history of the world? Oh my God. He's so good. He cares. And that's the biggest thing about anybody who's listening to this. If you have a podcast or want to do a podcast, watch Steve Austin. He has an actual affinity for the thing that he's watching. He has a love for what he's talking about and who he's talking to. And it's just some of the greatest conversations I've ever heard. Wade, when you talk to him. No, I'm listening. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, remember what you're going to say. If you go back and listen to his first few episodes, he wasn't that good. I mean, he was reading off Wikipedia fact sheets. He seemed out of his element. So I say this as a credit to Steve. He worked hard to get better. There's something about repetition and hard work and a dedication to getting better at the craft that you're doing. And Steve took it seriously, just like he did both in the ring and on promos, just like he did marketing with his T-shirts. When Steve sets his mind to something, he gets good at it. And if he has any kind of aptitude to get better, he's going to find a way to get better. So Steve, like, wasn't just a natural. You just dropped him in and he was great. And I think that is more a credit to him because he worked hard at getting better at that craft. And I agree with you. He is just phenomenal. And I have, after multiple shows over the last few years, I've texted him and I've just said, said, you're like really good at this. Like that was really well done. And I won't talk about, well, he was appreciative. Yeah, I'll just say that.
He's next level at this point. Absolutely.
Yes,
he's great to hear. And it's like, I just love the idea of somebody who has done the job, caring about the job still. He's great. Absolutely. You can text him and say, Cam said he's great. Thank you so much.
Well, yes. He'll say, stop bothering me with trying to put your friends over. I don't know this guy. Why'd you waste my time?
I'm going to get, I can't wait for the Stone Cold and MJF podcast. It's going to be hilarious.
Oh my God.
That's nasty. I'm sorry.
We've been talking a lot about Charlotte. I want to go to an email I got up on the screen here from Zach in Texas. He said, well, WWE managed to do something I never thought I'd do. Root for Charlotte Flair. I needed her to retain the title against Bianca Belair so that Becky could retain her title on Thursday. I know it's lame, but Becky and Charlotte swapping is the quickest way to get the belt Becky never lost back around her waist. It looks like that can happen now, and Becky and Bianca can continue their singles feud, even though they squandered Becky's over 3-year, nearly 1,000-day undefeated streak on Sasha Banks. How come AEW can give a match featuring the Bunny 10 minutes, but WWE can't give a tournament final with Shayna Baszler and Piper Niven 5 minutes? It's just shameful. I don't know if I'd rather have a short match that I feel cheated on or a 10-minute Bunny match that feels 8 minutes too long, but that's a topic for another day. Yeah, I mean, if you're rooting for Becky to, you know, like the if you don't do a belt swap, then you have to have two wrestlers do jobs who, in the way that WWE presents their product, that can be a big deal when you're a top act and you don't do a lot of jobs. Kind of like you're pointing out with Baszler and the Kurakuta Clutch and being locked, you know, Doudrop lasting a long time in it. That counts for something. Like there's certain things in WWE that count, certain things that don't. And, you know, a top star losing who doesn't lose very much generally is a big deal and people remember it. And if you're trying to get, because of the draft, you have a bunch of wrestlers start losing. I mean, like Roman Reigns is going to, they're going to have Roman Reigns lose twice just to try to reshuffle things in the draft. So like they protect people and fans generally know that whether they're explicitly thinking it or just sort of an undercurrent. So when you have someone like Becky, if she lost, well, they wouldn't let Roman lose, but they're letting Becky lose. So now that does in sort of a meta way bring Becky down a notch. And so by having, as Zach's pointing out, having Charlotte win, well, lose by DQ, but not win the title, or lose the title, it frees up WWE to do the title swap rather than having also Becky lose later this week.
Yeah, I think that's a good moment. Like, again, I think if we do a title swap, like, I think that's a cool moment. And that's, hey, we're going to do a WrestleMania match a year or two from now, and we'll put this in the video package. Wade, in the last year or so, I don't know how often you've been outside the house. Have you seen a famous person in a mask that you immediately recognized?
I don't think I've been out of the house enough to see a famous person, but I'd think about it.
Okay.
I don't think so.
At Comic-Con, the Blade and the Bunny were there. They came by the booth. The Blade is the nicest guy in the whole world, by the way. He's super sweet. We talked for a while. But the Bunny is the person I was like, oh, I see your mask on. You're the Bunny. She has the most distinctive look. I think it's how she parts her hair and her eyes. And it was
her
just
eyes.
Like,
oh, yeah.
That's the Bunny. Yeah. Shout out to the Bunny and Ruby Soho for tying Roman and Brock. That's super cool. But yeah, no, I don't all of a sudden root for Charlotte. I think that, again, like I think it's going to be a straight-up swap. I think that Bianca going into that match with the title would have been a bit of overkill as far as what they want to do. I think that when you say your season premiere is coming up next week, that's when you're setting everything up. Like Bianca winning at WrestleMania was great. We had a bunch of people at the house. Everybody loved it. It was a fantastic match. But I think that she's in that area where we want to see her chase. We want to see her eventually get it. Like that's where the money is. We've talked about this. I've said it on the show. Vince McMahon has wanted a all-American black champion forever.
Yeah.
Like, regardless of how you feel about anything, you just go by the books. You got Rock. You got Ahmed Johnson. You got kind of a long in the tooth Farooq. You got Shelton Benjamin. You got the first run of Bobby Lashley. Like, this is the thing that he's been trying to succeed in, and he found it in Bianca because people respond to Bianca like that. So I think there's a big thing in the chase. I think there's a great run that's in there for her, but she's had the title once. I think they made a misstep in how they took it off her, but put her on a different show, replicate it. I think it works.
By the way, you mentioned season premiere of Raw next week. I want to defend Jimmy Smith a little. He said season debut, and I kind of was like, oh, God, you know, like it's season premiere. If you watch SmackDown, if you watch WWE over the years, it just drilled into you, season premiere, they say it all the time every year. So it is a bit of a reveal that, you know, collectively Jimmy Smith isn't as familiar with the product. Things don't roll off his tongue in a way that they should with someone real familiar. It's not so like I'm burying him. But let that go, Corey Graves. Like, I was super critical of Booker T. I thought he was just undercut the product left and right with boneheaded things over and over again when he was color commentator. He does it on panel shows. And Corey Graves sometimes made me side with Booker T because he would be kind of nasty about how he'd correct Booker and try to show him up on the air. I thought, you know, maybe, you know, Vince is yelling in his ear or somebody, you know, Corey, correct him in season premiere because Vince is such a stickler for that stuff. So I don't – this isn't like – again, I'm – Corey Graves sometimes is a vessel for someone telling him what to say.
They had him actively bury Dana Brooke a couple of weeks ago? Jesus. Yo. She's been here all these years and she hasn't accomplished anything. I was like, yo, that ain't Corey's idea. Wow. That was rough.
Yeah, and that was in response, I think, to, again, the instinct. Now you're getting going down this road. Of Jimmy Smith and his instincts not being there, and he said something to set up the match in a way that went against the story Vince wanted to tell. And so Corey had to overcorrect in a way that came across as heavy-handed. But it was, again, they put somebody inexperienced like Jimmy Smith on the air who isn't familiar with the product, and when he wings it, he sometimes steps in it. And Vince is such a control freak about the story we're telling is this. Don't start improvising some other story we're not telling, especially if it goes against if it undercuts the impact of the story we're trying to tell. And, well, that's a problem when you hire somebody who doesn't know the product really well and you don't, you know, get them warmed up on the product. But when someone says season debut, it's fine to correct them in a subtle, plausibly deniable way by having Corey Graves go, that's right, Jimmy, next Monday on the season premiere. Don't emphasize premiere. Just go next weekend on the season premiere, blah, blah, blah. Like, you don't have to. Like, if Jimmy makes – I thought it was a good week for Jimmy Smith. If he makes a bad mistake or doesn't do his homework or, you know, whatever. I mean, there's times where Graves have been frustrated with him, and you can tell, and it was earned. This was petty, and it made me sympathize with Jimmy Smith a little. Speaking of announcers, I have to apologize to Jim Ross. I was critical of him for saying that the patella and the kneecap are the same thing because for years – you know, I was talking about Sting tearing his patella when he was on the rise in WCW. I thought the patella tendon was just a tendon, but no, the patella tendon is the tendon that's attached to the patella, which is the kneecap. And Jim Ross said the patella and the kneecap are one and the same. I said, where's Gorilla Monsoon when you need him? The patella is a tendon and the kneecap, they're not the same thing. I Googled it. Google let me down, or I didn't read it carefully, whatever it was. It's my fault. So I want to run that correction. Jim Ross was right. I was wrong. I wasn't as nasty as Corey Graves, but in correcting Jim Ross, I just said, where's Gorilla when you need him? Because, you know, Gorilla knew the anatomy inside and out. But I did want to run that question. And I actually had somebody who works in, like, the medical field called email and call me out on that very nicely. So just want to get that out there. Jim
Ross. I'm not saying I hate Jim Ross. What I am saying is when we went to the High Spots table, because we were with Faye Jackson, and so, like, we kind of, you know, skipped the line and met RVD and Katie Forbes, who were very sweet. Katie Forbes actually came to our panel. RVD was in the middle of a text, but he still dabbed me up. Shout out to RVD. But there was Jim Ross in his dumbass OU shirt. And, of course, we were up 28-7 in laws. So, Jim Ross, I don't not like you, but I certainly don't love you for you being happy and me being sad.
I didn't know where that was going, but, yep.
I always come home, Wade. I always come home.
Well, no, it was more like, what did he do that made you genuinely not like him? Like, I thought he was grumpy or dismissive, and no, it just had to do with that sport I don't pay any
what
attention to.
So, very offended.
Yes, yes.
Also, all right, Matt Cardona, bigger in person than you think. that's not television. That's a large man.
He's one of those, he has that needless size. He's needlessly big because it never worked in his favor. And it actually cost him, I think, because WWE didn't want a guy that they didn't see as a serious like main event act in the ring with people who were serious main event acts, making them look small. So he was counterproductively large.
Yeah. In GCW, it really stands out because they have some good sized guys, but he's different for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Dominic T emailed and pointed something out that I think is worth drawing attention to. He says, I don't understand why WWE repeats the same mistake again and again. I'm talking about the timing of the show. I understand the show is live, but when I see Bianca Belair and Charlotte rushing to go home, it ruins a very good match. They can go home at 22:55 and finish the show with an angle or the announcers hyping the next pay-per-view, something that is easy to scrap when they go too long. Always like the show. Thanks, Dominic. I appreciate it, Dominic. I saw Belair, and I actually don't see this happen a lot. She was clearly she was clearly getting a message from somebody at ringside about go home, and then she was having trouble like with her braid getting in the way of a move she was setting up, and it did feel like we were getting sort of a window into we're running out of time, hurry up, and it did feel like things were rushed. Usually I don't notice that, and usually I think they're actually pretty good about timing out the show, but it did seem, and I have no idea whose fault that would be in this case. I'm sure it varies from instance to instance. Did you pick up on that at the end where Bianca kind of looked like she, when she was climbing the top rope, she was looking over at someone who was trying to send her a little signal about the timing of things?
That I did not catch. I did not see that, but it makes sense because they would literally finish. I think they finished 2 minutes after the hour. So it was pretty tight. I'm watching it, and I kind of lost track of time. Looked over, I was like, "Oh, it's 9:59. This thing is going to end pretty quickly." And what do you know?
Yep. 414. I'm going to go to you. I've seen you flag yourself and then unflag a few times, so I don't know if you are just accidentally doing that or you think that you are flagged. You can just ignore me if you don't want to be on the show. But if you do, 414, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from. Okay, just hung up. He definitely didn't want to be on the show.
Bless his heart.
He kept pushing.
We appreciate the call, big dog.
Well, I felt bad because he kept pushing it and unpushing it, pushing it, unpushing it, and I don't recognize the number, so I was like, oh, this is a new caller. He might not know the system. And if he unpushed it, not knowing that he unpushed it, I wanted to bring him on, but he didn't want to be on. So we'll go. I got this email queued up, too, and this brings us to the other King of the Ring match that we haven't talked as much about, JD from Detroit. Says, hey, guys, I think that the Finn Balor, Xavier Woods, King of the Ring final has a chance to be match of the show at Crown Jewel. I also think either guy would be a good choice for King of the Ring, provided they don't saddle them with a real-life King gimmick. My question is, do you guys think there is any chance that they bring out the Demon King gimmick specifically for the Saudi show to add more flavor? Love the show and go VIP. I definitely don't think they're going to have Demon King show up. I don't think in WWE that... In WWE canon, I think it's the Demon, Finn Balor, not the Demon King. I don't think Vince is interested in Demon King being a thing if it's not a thing for him. So there's that. There is no chance of Xavier wins. He's not going to act like a king for the next year.
If Xavier wins, he's going to ham it up for months.
Yes.
I'm telling you. He's going to be ridiculous. Like, I don't think the Demon King shows up because they typically foreshadow that. Like, almost always, it gets a couple of weeks before when you know that thing's coming, right? But, like I said a couple of times in this show, if Xavier Woods wins, he will not only have beat two former world champions on his way, he will have beaten three singles champions and will be the only person in the tournament to never win a WWE singles title to win. Like, he's the only one who has not done that. So I think, like, we hate to say deserve in wrestling or earned in wrrestling. That's very difficult. I know Wade, a long, long time ago, I think this was even before I was a part of the team, but we talked about Chris Benoit winning the world title as a gold watch. Like, that was a thing, right? I think this is Xavier's gold watch, and I don't mean that to slander him at all. I just think that you've done such good work, such good PR. You've made us so much money. This is a thing you've been pushing for. Let's give you the thing. I don't think Finn Balor benefits at all from being King of the Ring. Like, I don't think it does anything for him because Finn Balor is somebody you can always just plug into a world title situation. Always. Wins or losses don't matter. He has the clout. He has the longevity. You can just put him there. Even when Roman Reigns beat him, it was by, I don't know, faulty engineering. Like, he doesn't need anything special to exist in that space. And him losing will not follow him around. I think this is a Woods thing that you can build off of. And somebody asked us at the panel wave, when do you see Xavier Woods being world champion? I was taken aback. Somebody answered first, luckily, but I was like, I don't know if that's ever his trajectory. As good as he is, and he's proven himself in the ring, I don't know if world champion exists for him in this current space. How many world champions have they had that are under 6 feet, under 215, and don't jump out the gym? Like, it just isn't really what they do. You know what I mean? Like, Daniel Bryan is unique. AJ Styles is unique. I think Xavier Woods is unique, but in a different way. I just don't know if they'll ever put a world belt on him. I think this is the happy balance. You know, give him King of the Ring, which is like, how many King of the Rings have there been? What, 15? 10? Something?
Yeah, somewhere in there. Yep.
It's not like a huge thing. It's a very exclusive club, and he's been pining for it. I think you give him this thing, it's something he can ride with. I don't even know if Xavier Woods, and I've met the guy once, so I don't know exactly what all his goals are. I don't know if Xavier Woods thinks he should be world champion. I don't know if that's in his wheelhouse, but he's publicly expressed this is the thing that he wants. He's pushed for it to even exist, so why not put it on him? I think it's just the right move. And again, Finn can do anything at any point Finn's made. It's different.
Do you think they've done, obviously, if you just watch the show, you know, you've picked up on the idea that Xavier has wanted to be King of the Ring a long time. Have they done a good enough job getting people to realize who only watch WWE TV proper that this isn't something they just made up for a storyline, but it's an actual thing? Because WWE can make anything up they want and tell the story in 3 weeks. Oh, they could say Austin Theory, like, oh, Austin Theory looked up at Jeff Hardy and always wanted to, like, be him. And that may or may not be true, but they can make it up, and it's the story they're telling. Have they done a good enough job actually establishing that this is really a thing? Because I would think that would help market the match.
I think they've talked about former King of the Rings. Like, when they mentioned that Brock Lesnar was a former King of the Ring, even though, like, that – he either faced Jeff Hardy or RVD in the finals. This was like back in like 02 or something like that. I remember that match. But they even said, like, you know, Brock Lesnar's former King of the Ring. I remember that was like basically a world title opportunity. I think that's why he got to face Rock, as a matter of fact. So that would have been 03, I think, maybe. But anyway, I think they have done a good enough job saying this person – I think they mentioned Triple H. I think they mentioned Stone Cold Steve Austin. I think they might have even brought up Brett. But, yeah, I do think they've done a good job of saying these are your former King of the Rings. Everybody they mentioned was a former world champion. So I think, yeah, Brock was 02. Thank you, Joe. Yeah, I think they have done a good job of that, saying, like, these are people who were world champions. Without saying this is what it led to, they brought up the right names. They didn't say King Mabel. God rest his soul, but I understand.
Xavier brought him up.
Wood
first.
Said King Mabel.
Yeah. He's the first one he mentioned. He picked, like, some odd
Wood
choices of all
the former black King of the Ring. Like, this is a well-written show. Again, everything's not going to be for everybody. I think Xavier Woods is a super universal act, but they also do a great job of leaning into who they know has particular fondness for them. So they brought up Booker, and again – not me and you, Wade, but people disagree on Booker T's WWE run as far as after the invasion angle, but hell, he was world champion. I mean, that's you know, we want that. And King Booker, while a very divisive gimmick, was super important and carried him and is a good reason why he's in the position he is in today. So I do think they've done a good job of, at the very least, referencing people who have won that to make it feel important, for sure. Also, Wade, why did – people were telling me, like, yo, Sami Zayn would be a great King of the Ring. I was like, do you pay attention to the world at all? Sami Zayn ain't getting on that plane. What are you talking about?
It would have been fun.
As a matter of fact, Jinder Mahal ain't going to be in that final. Like, guys, you have to read one book, just one. I promise you. You'll understand how the world works a little bit.
I think Sammy would be a delightful king, but this isn't his year.
Yeah, that in your hood in Minnesota.
All right. a scenario for King of the Ring. I look at the lay of the land post draft here. I can't wait for next week's season premiere of Raw. Premiere. That the babyface depth chart: Big E, Damian Priest, Edge unless he turns, Keith Bearcat Lee unless he turns, and Kevin Owens could go either way, and then you have Finn Balor. Now, granted, that's okay. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 names who are right now probably cast as babyfaces.
Okay.
Then I mean, the Men's Steel
side. I think Ricochet's there. I think R-Truth is there. I understand that that's a lower level. I'm certainly not disputing that.
I've got Ricochet on SmackDown on my
show. Oh, Ricochet's on SmackDown. Okay, I apologize.
Yeah, he
It ain't super deep. Well, I mean, you have Randy and Riddle. Like, they're technically babyfaces. But singles, I understand. Like, Street Profits are there. They're babyfaces. But, yeah, on the singles route, you're right. For sure.
So if we assume Orton and Riddle are going to be in tag teams for a little while longer too, I'm just balancing this out with the heel depth chart, and I have a point I'm leading to here. So Bobby Lashley as the top heel, and then you got Seth, Karrion Kross, and after that there's a drop off. Apollo Crews, not a top tier guy. John Morrison, definitely not a top tier guy. And I don't know if he's a heel or face at this point, honestly. But it doesn't matter to the point I'm making. T-Bar, maybe they give him a push. I'll believe it when I see it, and then we'll talk. Then Austin Theory and Veer. There's not as much depth on the heel side in terms of established guys. Now, that changes instantly if they turn Bearcat heel or Edge heel, or Kevin Owens heel, for that matter. Now, that said, I wonder if Finn Balor doesn't go heel. You talk about him being Teflon, he can move into the world title anytime you want. What if they're building up Xavier and this being his dream, and it leads to some sort of cheap win or something that gets framed as a heel move for Balor? He becomes King Finn Balor, whatever, you know, or Finn King Balor, whatever they go with it. And it actually is crushing Xavier's dream. That actually is what sets him up as a heel. That would balance out without having to turn Edge or Owens or Lee or even two or three of them if they did that. Does that scenario seem likely at all? I should say likely. Does it seem plausible, possible to you, Cam? Do you like the scenario of Balor freshening up after kind of hitting the ceiling on SmackDown against Reigns and coming up short? Does coming back to Raw but doing it as a heel reframe him in a way where everyone gives him a fresh look and he has absolute fresh matchups at that point, because he could be a heel opponent for Big E. He could help elevate Damian Priest through a feud, a heel Balor against Edge, intriguing to me. Plus, he could help bring along Bearcat Lee also. And then a heel Balor against babyface Owens, which is just a total role reversal. So to me, I kind of like that. How about you?
Yeah, no, his best run, and again, he's had a lot of good runs since he's been there. His best run was his NXT heel run. He was amazing. Yeah, I like him being the guy who can flip. They've had guys like that. Kevin Owens has been that guy. Jericho was absolutely that guy. Christian was that guy. I think Balor could absolutely do that and excel in that role. I don't know if people will boo him, and that's an issue. Like, wait, he has 24
abs. You don't think crushing
like,
Xavier's dream? You don't think crushing Xavier's
But I think the issue is, so they moved to SmackDown, right? Because they split them up.
Who are you referring to? I'm sorry.
The New Day.
Yeah, the Kofi and Xavier are on SmackDown.
Yeah, so whatever happens in that match, they can't carry it on. Like,
well, right, it would be purely to turn Balor, not to start a feud.
Well, no, for sure, but I mean, like, they couldn't – you don't have Xavier coming out saying this was wrong. Maybe you have Big E saying you did my brother wrong, but
yeah.
I don't know if it'll carry in the right way. But in all seriousness, like, even if he is, he's a very good heel. So
yeah.
I think – you can get it over, but again, I think Balor, hey, wait, 24 abs, man, it's different. People feel different about that, man. I don't know if the main roster will boot the same way, because even though I think his best work was as a heel in NXT, they didn't even hate him in NXT. He was kicking Kyle O'Reilly's head in, and they were still cheering. You know what I mean? Like, some guys are just so established, I don't know if it does that, but I think he'd be a great opponent for Big E, regardless of orientation, regardless of alignment.
Yes. All right, 414 is back. If you don't want us to go to you, you can hang up again. But I figured call back and you pushed once, so now's a better time. 414, I'm going to take your name and where you're calling from. Hello, 414? Are you there?
Hi. Wait, can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Naveen from Los Angeles, previously from Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Cool. You said Naveen?
Naveen.
Great. Yep. Gotcha. Naveen. All right, glad I clarified. Yeah. Naveen, what's on your mind about RAW tonight?
I wanted to quickly talk about the scenario where I would buy Queen Dudra. So the only way I'd buy is if after she wins the crown, she goes to that the chair and says, "Screw Eva Marie, screw the stupid name she gave me, and screw all the unrealistic beauty standards. I am Queen Piper Niven, and I'll beat any and every woman in that locker room," and walks away. If she doesn't do that, what do we have? We have a dancing queen. Otherwise, it's better they have Jelena Vega as the queen. So what do you think about that promo?
Sure. Yeah, I'm gonna put you on hold because we're getting some background noise there. But Cam, it's worth mentioning. You know that winning the queen gimmick can be an affirmation of the marginalization of her into a corny character who isn't it silly to see this lady dance and isn't her accent adorable and now she's wearing a crown, isn't this just funny? Or, as Naveen has played out, it could actually be a transformational moment, ironically, because winning a silly cartoon crown usually brings somebody down a notch or makes their character less dimensional. Even Booker, was a nuanced character throughout his career, and then he became King Bucca, and everything was just, catchphrase and after another. And some people, like you said, it's polarizing gimmick, but it wasn't a particularly multidimensional, nuanced character. Dewdrop winning the queen could actually be an excuse to actually have her stand up for herself a little bit and break away from the demeaning one-dimensional character, I would argue, that she has been saddled with, including the name that, Eva Marie gave her, and she has since said, "I like it," which I think, extinguished some respect that people were hoping that she would show she had for herself as a character in the journey with the whole Eva Marie feud.
The first time I called her Dewdrop was tonight on this show because I felt I had to use, the actual proper terminology. She's a fantastic talent. I don't think I knew how good she was talking until the last couple of weeks. She's really, really good. As a matter of fact, is she Scottish or Irish?
I think Scottish.
Okay, whichever one she is, right?
Yeah.
Drew has always been good on the mic. I think Sheamus is super underrated on the mic. They're good. You know what I mean? They speak very clearly, they say what they feel. They have great attitudes. I've always thought that about that. And Balor, too. Ireland or Scotland, they've always been really good. So she comes across very clear and very genuine. Oh, she's Scottish. Okay. Yeah, great.
Did I say that? I don't even know what I said. I hope I'm right.
Okay. But, I've never thought, she wasn't any good. She's always been good. I think that – I don't know if Vince can resist putting that thing on somebody from Europe. I feel like it's too much of a...
Yes, I know.
And also, all due respect to Zelina Vega, she was brought back and lost a ton of matches. I don't know if they value her in that way. Now, it could be, hey, this is punishment for jumping ship because you was getting that internet money. Wade, let me tell you this. As much as I love making T-shirts, this Twitch thing, that pays my gas bill every month. So, people should – and I'm nobody, so I can imagine how mad these wrestlers get when their Twitch gets taken away or tries to get taken away because I'm sure they pay a couple of bills off this thing, So maybe her losing all these matches has been punishment for her leaving the fold, but I don't know. She just started winning when the tournament happened. I don't know if they're all of a sudden going to invest in somebody like that.
Yeah. All right, Naveen, back to you if you have any other topic or follow-up or closing words.
Yes. So by not giving the title opportunity to the king and the queen, it's like the winner of Money in the Bank getting just the briefcase, you know, not getting the contract. It's like that.
Yeah.
two quick things. So I would like to see Queen Piper Niven with like a small person, like bring back Hans Vogel and have him be like the Tyrion Lannister, like a queen's hand, you know, or I'd like to see if they can make something happen. And last thing, so Corey wasn't being petty. He was trying to trick you into showing love for Jimmy Smith. That's all I have to say.
Well, Naveen, I heard you say Jimmy Smith, but I didn't hear the few words before that, and I want to know, what did you say?
So Corey wasn't being petty. It was him trying to trick you into showing love for Jimmy Smith.
Well, it worked. It worked.
I'm just kidding.
thanks, Naveen. I appreciate it. By the way, where are you right now? Are you like an airport or a racetrack? We can't. I'm trying to figure out the noise.
A racetrack at 11:45. That's late.
No, so I'm on the West Coast, right? So it's like 8 or 9 p.m. I just got off the bus. So I was on the bus and the call kept dropping because I was on the bus coming home.
Yeah, he's calling from LA camp.
That boy in the ocean right now. How dare you? But we appreciate it.
Thanks, Naveen. Good talking to you.
I'll
call back again.
Sounds good. Yeah, please do.
Bye.
Bye. Yep. All right, cool. I want to just run down here the lineup for Thursday for the event in Saudi Arabia. I'll say it if WWE won't. I'm going to live with it. Just get your quick thoughts, Cam, on what you think is going to happen here. And let's just start with Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. What do you think is going to happen here, including your thoughts on the story that they're telling with Brock, you know, mind-effing Paul Heyman and Reigns a little bit? I would contend that's what's happening here, not Brock, you know, doing double reverse psychology by revealing his plan with Heyman ahead of time to make it Roman think it isn't the plan, because that's not how Roman is selling it.
Roman retains, but Paul gets caught slipping. I think Paul gets caught playing his hand on Brock's side, but Roman retains.
Now, is it plausible deniability? Is it ambiguous? Like, oh, I didn't mean to do that, but it happened. And Paul's like, no, I did not, you know, Roman Reigns, I did not mean to do, to cost. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I think so. Again, Paul just gets caught slipping. Yep. Roman retains, and they have, I don't want to tell you about Twitter trials, Wade. I don't know if you're familiar with what a Twitter trial is, but I think that something similar happens to Paul Heyman.
How long does the match go? What's your over-under?
18 minutes.
Whoa. I'll take the under. In a second.
If it goes 17:49, I quit.
I'll take the under on 15 and give you three extra minutes. I don't know that I'm right, and I hope I'm wrong. I just in Saudi Arabia, I know it's, you know, their one big event other than Survivor Series rest of this year, but man, Brock's been earning money, you know, on a permanent level, much higher than that. But I hope not.
I think he does, Wade. Like they have him on this, you know, free agent basis. Do you think if you had to see him, let's say, seven times between now and the end of the year, I know that might be heavy. If he does seven shows between now and the end of the year after Crown Jewel, are they mostly on Raw or mostly on SmackDown?
God, I hope he doesn't do seven shows. I think he should be more of a special attraction.
I also love that. I don't know if we've ever had that conversation, but, like, I'm a big boxing guy. So, like, seeing Floyd Mayweather twice a year was one of the highlights of my 20s. It was like, oh, was like not on TV every week. I was like, no, this is great. Like, this is what I want from my champion. I don't want to see him all the time.
Have like a TV
TV in a non-SummerSlam WrestleMania setting.
I got you.
Becky Lynch, Bianca Belair, Sasha Banks. Becky wins, and they do a belt swap. Is that our consensus here?
That is what I think. Yeah, Becky wins. They do a belt swap. It's super tense. It's super nasty. Just building to a match probably next April.
All right, Mansoor Mustafa Ali, just one-on-one singles match. Has there ever been I'm not sure what the odds are on this one, but, I mean, I know WWE likes to put people to lose in their hometown. I just don't think that applies to Mansoor in Saudi Arabia.
Does Boise State lose on bluegrass? No, they don't. Mansoor is going to smoke Mustafa Ali. It's the greatest home field advantage that's ever existed. Yeah.
And you know, we say what we say about Saudi Arabia, and I know, you know, I feel bad in the respect that there are genuine WWE fans who are at those shows. And they're going to absolutely love Mansoor winning. It's going to be like a pop in 1978 for, you know, the regional babyface winning. Like, those fans are going to go old school apeshit for that. So they got to book that and have a few cameras on the crowd to get their reaction.
You should win in your hometown. Like, this, like, outside of any politics or any feelings, like, the thing they did with Bianca when she got the key to the city was nasty. They had her win the dark match afterward. No, do that on TV. Like, there's no reason to experience that. Win in your hometown, make the crowd happy. It's so easy. But no. Greatest home field advantage in all of entertainment. He's going to smoke Mustafa Ali. And he probably won't win six more matches between now and June. But that's fine.
And Seth Rollins, Hell in a Cell.
Ooh,
what happens to him?
I have no idea. I have no idea. Low-key, they've done a great job building this up. The parallels between them, I didn't even know. And usually people like you and I beat WWE to this stuff.
Yeah,
but like, no, they've done a great job of Seth being like, "Yo, you did this back in 2002. I did that. I did that, but better." And even Edge being like, "These are the things you're attacking. These are the things I care about. This is why I gotta beat you." It's been really, really good. Having a Hell in a Cell match before the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, weird, but you know, you super serve the people who pay you, I suppose. This is what I'll say. Seth is in that Jericho Christian position where he can stomach any loss, and he will not lose momentum by losing. So for that, I have to say Edge is going to win, and then Seth will come out in a stupid suit and challenge Roman for the title, and it'll be fine.
Well, Seth's going to end up on Raw, and Edge is going to end up on
Raw. Seth will come out and challenge Big E in a stupid suit.
Yes.
Mark for edit.
It's going to be interesting. Edge and Seth both on the same brand after going through Hell in a Cell. I'm curious about this finish. Do they just pretend? Like, do they just coexist on Raw but not cross paths? Or is there something about this finish that leads to them ending up in a different place? Do they end up as a mega tag team on Raw? They fight until they respect each other.
You know what's crazy? I think they could really – I think – Edge kind of set a precedent where, no, you've done all the things that I've done.
Yeah.
I think they can come out of this thing having, you know, almost killed each other and be like, okay, that's it. And rock from that. I really think they can. Also, Wade, the best touch in the whole world is that Edge called FTR to make sure that Beth Phoenix was okay. I love that. Oh, God, I love that. Like, I sent FTR to the house to make sure that you're okay. Like, why pretend it's real tribalism? Let's have a little fun. I think that's
great. I love the reaction on Twitter when you post rate. Like, I'll post ratings on the @PWTorch account and just state the facts. And then it's just war. Team AEW comes out. Demos are all that matters. Stop talking about viewership. This is a win. And then Team WWE comes up and they're just like, oh yeah, all our and demos are important. They never were important until that was what you needed to claim victory. And it's like, you know, they have no idea what like 30 years of ratings reporting by, you know, credible wrestling reporters has been like in the evolution of it.
and the consistency of it for 30 years of us reporting on this stuff. They just show up and they just make up that we're making something important that we've never talked about before, or vice versa. And it's entertaining. It's also a little sad, but it is what it is.
Wade, they call me an e-drone. I was out 3 weeks ago having drinks with Ricky Starks. Like, none of this is fair. None of this is fair. They just decide that they stand on a certain side of the wall and just go from that. And I'm like, guys, it's never as deep as you want it to be. Let's all have fun.
And it's okay for it to be a nuanced answer, which is AW under very special circumstances that will probably not be repeated until the next time SmackDown moves to FS1, got a demo win in the overall viewership comparing 2.5 hours of SmackDown to 1 hour of Rampage. And they also got a broader, all adult 18-49 win in the head-to-head 30 minutes. And that's a fact. And it doesn't mean AEW has now trounced WWE and they've taken over. It is a asterisk victory.
So actual question, Wade.
Yep.
When's the last time that Tony Khan slept?
I have no idea.
My
I
man
don't...
is on 10 today.
Yes.
Talking about those ratings. And bless his heart, like, look, I respect that he puts his all into this thing. He is very dedicated to this. He's putting on a great show. It's so fun to watch him, like, nah, you got it wrong. Let's talk about what's really going on. I love it. I love it so much. And I love Eric Bischoff being the one to be like, yo, I know I'm not the perfect messenger, but... This is all fantastic. I love it.
It is totally how you frame it. I mean, is it a victory? Is it not? It's a victory for Tony because people are talking about Rampage and SmackDown in the same sentence. It's a victory that WWE added 30 minutes commercial free to show that they were scared they were going to lose the demo battle, not counting any overlap. You know, this would be less of a story if WWE didn't add the 30 minutes. As Tony said, it's a war I didn't want. It's a war that you brought to me, and I won. And he did under his rules, which is demos are what count the most. But SmackDown still has way more people watching, and advertisers don't care a lot about those people, but they buy pay-per-views, they order Peacock, they buy tickets to wrestling shows, they buy merchandise. Total audience counts, but demos more important than total audience, but total audience counts too. Like, nobody wants a nuanced answer on both sides. Like, you know, the tribalism people. I think there's an 80% in the middle who get that this is nuanced and you can look at it in multiple ways. And it's a good night for AEW and not a great night for WWE, but WWE still has a sizable lead. And when they're back on Fox, they're going to trounce Rampage next Friday.
Yeah. Just let's talk about what it is. Like, it can just,
yeah.
Things can just exist as they are. And it does not mean you have a preference. It doesn't mean you have an agenda. You can just count things and they be what they are. It's that simple. Like, it's a show on Fox. I've been watching shows on Fox since The Simpsons had Squiggly Doodles. Like, it's just an institution. And I
Tracy
love
Ullman. Tracy Ullman, baby.
I love that CM Punk is like the establishment on Rampage and talks on Dynamite. Like, I love that Daniel Garcia is getting shine. I love that Lee Moriarty's getting shine. It's a great show. But let's not pretend like things aren't what they are. One of these channels is available to everybody. Another channel is available to you if you got an extra $60 a month. Just what it is.
Yep. And, oh, Nielsen ratings aren't accurate anymore. Well, yeah, but they use a methodology week to week that is consistent. And so if they're off 15% one way or the other, in a way that's unfair or that we don't know about, it doesn't change the fact that it's the best scoreboard we have. And Rampage likely had more viewers this week than last week, despite going head-to-head with half-hour SmackDown. And there's no question, no matter how doubtful you are about how accurate Nielsen is in this segmented way and people watching different ways at different times on different devices, there's no question SmackDown lost nearly two-thirds of their audience because they went from broadcast TV that anybody can have with an antenna, although I'm shocked how many people don't know that. Like, I saw someone, I don't know what notification my phone came in from something, but they're like, how do I Dish stop carrying NBC? How can I watch it? And I'm like, go to Best Buy and spend $8 and plug it into the back of your damn TV. It's a free channel. You don't need to pay for Dish to get the broadcast network. People don't know that. It just blows my mind. But anyway,
Jake Barnett, I see you from ProWrestling.net. I'm putting you in a headlock this week. Stop bothering Wade.
Yes.
He actually lives like down the street. That's my guy. He's super cool.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so going down the rabbit hole. But you can say, well, it actually was a more fair battle this week. TNT versus FS1. That's not fair when it's TNT against Fox broadcast. So you can say, well, it's not fair for SmackDown. They were not on their normal network. Or you can say it's more fair for AEW than it ever was because now it's cable versus cable. You can frame it however you want to frame it as a victory or a loss. It is what it is, and it's up for interpretation. But the facts are the facts. This was more competitive in demos than anybody imagined a year or two ago AEW would be if they had an overlap on SmackDown. In that sense, it's a victory, even if there's some asterisks there and it's a kind of a one-off thing.
They're smoking it right now. Like, they're putting on a very good show. I think that pound for pound, I think they have more in-ring talent. I also think that AEW is doing an amazing job of focusing on their young talent. Like, I don't know a match that WWE's put on in the last, let's say, 6 months, where it's like, oh, here's our young up-and-comer against our established star. Like,
yep.
Maybe Austin Theory counts, but they've tried him once or twice. You know what I mean? Like, yep. It's a different vibe. But, yeah, they are they're competing and making strides in a way that they can. WWE is simply the established brand right now, and it's going to take some time. But if I had to, like, say, oh, whose wrestling is better right now, I would say AEW's. I'm not going to pretend like I'm not going to, in a moment, turn on WWE's show before theirs if they're running against each other. It's just kind of what it is. But, yeah, it's going to be some time, but they're doing their thing. It's a good show, for sure.
All right, so back to Crown Jewel after that sidebar. Goldberg, Bobby Lashley, no holds barred. What happens here? I mean, Goldberg's not actually going to kill Bobby Lashley, so he's going to come up short of what he vowed to do, which babyfaces should never do. But I love tonight. We haven't talked about this, the back and forth with Bobby and Goldberg, where Bobby's just like, I should file criminal charges against you. But that's not how I work. I'm just going to beat you up in the ring. I've enjoyed this, but I thought Goldberg was good tonight on the microphone. I thought this
Why
did
you want to kill that man so bad? Like, I don't have children. Like, listen, I have dogs. Like, I understand if somebody looked at my dog funny, I'd be very upset. So I get why he's mad, but like, why you want to kill that man? It was a mistake. He didn't see him. I think that Wade, seriously, 10 years from now, we're going to look on Bobby Lashley's run for the last year and a half and really celebrate it as something special. I think he's been great. The U.S. title run, the Hurt Business, the WWE title run, the matches that he's had, MVP in his corner cutting promos. I think we're really going to look at this as something special and something that they missed out on by about 5-6 years. But he's been great. He's been really, really good. And like, as much as we'd like to see Big E get that Goldberg match, this is the match right now because Bobby can do it fast, Bobby can do it slow. And Goldberg, limited at this age, I think they can get kind of a let's do a lot of strikes, let's make it look tough, let's go home. I think they can really do that. But no, Bobby Lashley wins this because Goldberg doesn't need it. Goldberg needs the payday. All due respect, we all need the payday. But no, Goldberg's legacy was finalized in 1999. He doesn't need any of this. None of this tarnishes him. It helps Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley gets back in the world title picture. We might get some more Big E Bobby Lashley or somebody else. But yeah, no. Goldberg does not fulfill what he wants to do. Goes away for 6 months and nobody remembers it. And then he fights, I don't know, whoever you got that's over 250.
All right, then RK-Bro against Styles and Omos. Do Styles and Omos regain these belts? What happens here?
Absolutely not. RK-Bro keeps it rolling. I think that we're leading to maybe a Rumble match with them in the Street Profits. You and Bruce Mitchell, I almost said RIP. He's still with us. God bless Bruce Mitchell. Y'all had a conversation months ago, Wade, about Montez Ford being a world champion. And one of the criticisms was his size. I think that he's filled out just enough. I think that and I actually posted a poll, Wade. I said, in the next 5 years, who ends up with more total world titles, Kevin Owens or Montez Ford, between WWE and AEW?
Interesting, yeah.
I think it's Montez Ford. But I think that they were so good while they were on Raw. They were so good in NXT. They were so good on SmackDown that's the money feud. Even if you look at RK-Bro as faces, I think that the Street Profits are unabashedly faces. And so there's a good feud there. But no, AJ has done a good job at helping Omos along, but I don't think they gain anything from being tag champs again. I think that Omos learning his craft as AJ's manager probably helps more than anything else. But no, I think they retain and eventually get into a feud with the Profits.
It was interesting. A couple nuggets were dropped in the promo where Riddle and Orton were giving credit, or was it, I'm trying to think what promo it was, where they were giving credit to Omos for being the guy who does all the work.
Yeah, and that was tonight, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And so when you have that, it was the Street Profits who talked him up. Yeah, that's what it was. And and they said Omos is the guy who does all the work on the school project, and AJ's the guy who takes advantage of him, doesn't really do anything. And, you know, it was thrown out there, sort of throwaway comment, you know, they're just trying to stir trouble between, you know, create some tension. But it is, and this is where Vince McMahon, you know, for all his faults, if you watch him long enough, you go, okay, that means something. He is planting the seed in the average viewer, because he caters to the average viewer. As Roman Reigns said last week when he was ripping on AEW, well, that's for hardcore fans. We have a much broader audience. We appeal to a much larger, you know, we intentionally try to appeal to a much larger group. Vince is thinking of not the hardcore fans, but just that casual viewer. He's planted the seed of sympathy in Omos that Styles is taking advantage of him. Doesn't mean Omos is turning tomorrow or next week, but they planted that seed. And I just pin that as something to think about, as something that was established here in October. As they are beginning to tell the story of Omos becoming his destiny, which is the Andre the Giant that Vince McMahon loved in the 70s, that special enforcer, smiling guy with the big hands who shows up to defend baby faces against nasty heels.
Hey, Wade. Hey, was Roman right about CM Punk?
I would say TBD.
Yeah, I think CM Punk's – so Roman was basically like, I think he's lost a step. I don't think he has the strength, and I don't think he has the explosiveness.
Yep.
And my counter to that was, while I think that's true, I think the story that they're telling is that CM Punk has to find new ways to win. And I appreciate that. Like, that's what I want from, I got an old granddaddy. I love Westerns where these old gunslingers have to use their wits instead of their skills to find a way to beat these young guys. I love that. Like, that's my thing. So, like, CM Punk, like, not being, CM Punk from 08, I'm okay with that. Like, I think that is what tells the story. But, yeah, I don't think Roman's lying. Like, CM Punk, we used to make a joke, Wade, about CM Punk's elbow drop where he got no air.
Yeah.
But, no, it does not take away from his ability as a pro wrestler. We all do things in different ways. Like, that's just what it is. I find it interesting, like, that Roman's talking about this guy or this guy couldn't beat me in a fight, when all of a sudden AEW has all these boring guys who won MMA world titles. You don't want to fight them. You don't want to fight Junior Dos Santos. His ears look like my wall, which is stucco. You don't want that.
The Roman stuff's fun. We're going to – We need to spend more time talking about that on a different show, because there's a lot to dive into in terms of that.
Somebody posted the suffering succotash promo like 2 days ago. I was like, Roman is a top 10 wrestler all time just based on the fact that he survived that. Because, wow, what a shift in tone and personality, for sure.
Yeah, oh, Roman's turning into a really fascinating player in this business when he starts talking, and he speaks – and now is somebody who isn't, you know, trying to play the game to get rich, He's speaking as somebody who's rich and gets to say what he wants, and he's definitely believes that he's earned the stature to speak the way that he does. And he is brand loyal and not at all – he's unabashed in being brand loyal. But, you know, Punk's gimmick is not explosiveness. It was, and this is why it's sort of this is why I want to, you know, do it on a separate podcast that we're not 2+ hours into talking about a specific show, because it is worthy of a long form discussion, which is Punk's problem isn't explosiveness or not explosiveness. Punk's problem is, does his character only work when he's in a company that he hates? And what is there for him to fight for, and what is there for fans to rally behind him on when he's not as good as at least a dozen other wrestlers in that company in the ring right now, and he's happy? Okay, what's your gimmick? And that's what he's in search of. It has nothing to do with how explosive he is. Roman can define it that way if he wants, but that's a red herring. What's going to make or break Punk isn't his explosiveness. He's not trying out for the NFL.
It's really weird when a guy who – because I think one of the appeals of Punk – and again, I'm a big CM Punk fan. I want to establish that beforehand. I think one of the appeals of Punk was, from regular fans, he can do it, I can do it too. Like, I genuinely think that's a part of his appeal.
Yeah.
Not a body guy, not a crazy athletic guy, but somebody who's incredibly
effective. Not a gym rat.
Yeah, he's incredibly effective. Like, super good. Like, I don't want to take away from what he did, but I think that there was a relatability about him. But all of a sudden, he's in this environment where you got Daniel Bryan, who apparently, not even from the fountain of youth, but is allowed the freedom to be himself. You got the Bucks. You got Kenny Omega. You got Adam Page. You got a Ricky Starks. You got Pac. Like, you got all these guys. Jungle Boy is, not that he didn't have it, but he's really figuring it out. You got Darby. You got MJF. Like, all these guys who are, like, crazy athletic, right? And also aren't guys who we expect, like, I don't want to say not mainstream, because that's not fair, because what is mainstream in wrestling? But not guys who Punk can say, I'm different than him. Like, he doesn't have the Cena next to him. He doesn't have the Rock next to him. These are guys who are comparable. And so, yeah, like, and again, the honeymoon is still there. I enjoy hearing Punk's music. The best thing that's ever happened to him was having a copywritten song that his billionaire boss could buy again. That's the best thing ever.
Yeah.
But, no, Punk's great on commentary. Punk's really been good in the ring, but you do wonder, like, okay, we're literally running him parallel to Daniel Bryan. They typically don't wrestle on the same show. He's typically commentating when Daniel Bryan's wrestling. Is this sustainable? It's going to be really fun to watch. But I will say this. Anybody who thinks Roman Reigns was funny or dedicated when he said Punk didn't have explosiveness, if you really, really watch that, you're probably on CM Punk's side in AEW. So I don't think it's creating dissension at this point.
Right, yes. All right,
also,
finally.
Bucks wear fake shoes. I want to say that really quickly.
Oh.
For anybody who's listening, but keep going, Wade.
Good, I wouldn't know, but I feel better knowing that. All right, so Big E, Drew McIntyre. I think it's the last match we haven't talked about from Crown Jewel. Obviously, Big E wins, and he probably wins clean but not decisive, if that makes sense. This will be, you know, Drew goes for a Claymore, Big E hits a big ending, Drew kicks out, he stands up, Big E small packages them, and boom, it's like a leverage pin, and they both gave it their all. Something like that, but there's no way Drew takes the Raw title to SmackDown or complicates things by switching that belt. That's my take.
Over under how many handshakes tonight? I got two. I think they handshake after the match. I think Woods and Balor handshake after the match. I think we get two handshakes tonight. But I believe that both New Day members end up winning those matches. Yeah, the titles aren't jumping ship. I remember the first time when Batista got drafted to SmackDown, it was like, okay, we're just switching everything up. Like, oh, I get that. But no. Big E definitely wins this clean. I actually agree with you. I think it's some type of leverage pin, not after a serious finish, to keep Drew strong. And then Drew is chasing Roman probably through Royal Rumble.
All right, very good. Kem, we will wrap up on that note. Remind people again how they can find you on Twitter.
Absolutely. Twitter, Instagram, Seahawk, it's C-E-E-H-A-W-K. If you're somebody who looks at the videos on YouTube, fine. The Beauty of Blackness in Wrestling from yes. Big Gold Belt Media. Myself, Kez, who wrote the New Day Usos Rap Battle. My friend Lovey, who creates wrestling-related jewelry. Retired wrestler Faye Jackson. Jay Rhodes, who's responsible for Paradigm Pro Wrestling on IWTV, and my man Chris, who created the brand Tiger Driver. So, yeah, definitely check that out on YouTube. Great show. And if you want to go back a little bit, if you check out the August edition of PWI, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, you'll find an interview, me interviewing Alley Cat on her transformation to Alley Cat. So, yeah, again, Wade, you've made so many of these things happen. Things are coming to fruition. It's the coolest thing in the whole world. Yeah, thank you so much.
I'm always happy when people who volunteer, step up and volunteer to help in the torch, and it leads to really cool opportunities for them, bigger and better, or just different things than they originally anticipated, and their passion grows and their opportunities come one after the other, and you are a prime example of that, and you have, whatever door I opened, you've made it happen. You have hustled and brought talent and perspective that people want to hear more of.
Zach Haydorn. Zach, keep doing your thing, baby. You making it happen. I love Zach. Glad I helped bring him into the fold. That's my guy.
Yes. And say hi to Jake next time you're at like 7-Eleven.
Absolutely. I'm putting Jake in a headlock. I love you, Jake. I got to pressure you a little bit.
All right. Take care, everybody. Thanks so much for listening.